Chaos. Woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, chilling with coffee mugs, me and coffee chugs, talking education all across the nation, pushing boundaries, thinking innovation. Chaos.
Hello everyone, how you doing? Welcome to another episode on Living on the Edge of Chaos podcast. Oh man, I am so pumped for this, for a lot of reasons for this guest. First and foremost, man, this guy is just speaks my love language when it comes to education and exactly what we need a lot more of, not just in education, I would also argue, in just our personal lives. Yep. Number two, man, I just haven't had a chance to talk to him in forever and a day. So this is also, this is like truly, I pitched the podcast to all of you. I'm already getting long-winded here. Like, this is like a virtual coffee shop. This is legit probably what this is going to be, because, man, yeah. We haven't touched base in a while, but our energy and our past, we follow each other online, but we all know there's nothing better than a good old conversation. Yeah. And I would say third, we were just talking before we hit record. I don't know how in the world you haven't been like a featured guest on here like 25 times for the work that you do and what I believe. But we are here with the first official recording of us together. So, Jed, welcome to the show. I just love everything you've got going on, but I'm going to let you introduce yourself to the listeners. So, who are you? What do you do? And what in the world do you got going on?
Well, my name is, you've got part of it down. Jed Garrett, that's me. That's my name. I've been in education since 2001. So I've been at this a minute or two. I taught first and second grade for about 13 years. One of those years was I looped up to third grade. Around year 10 of that, I started working in higher ed as an adjunct and leading professional development in various places across the state and country. And then in 2019, I decided to venture out into the world all by myself at doing consulting and adjuncting work. And then the pandemic hit, and I swallowed deeply like everybody else. took a deep breath and figured out how to make it work. And here we are. This June, I will be 5 years as an education consultant. And also, I still teach in higher ed. A lot of people don't. They say, oh, well, that's not in the classroom. It's absolutely the classroom, especially in the classes that I teach, because I'm working with future teachers. Mm-hmm. So it is very much still in the classroom. I'm literally in this moment as we're podcasting, I'm putting together a little booklet for tomorrow's class. So I'm doing the things just like I always did. When I'm not teaching or consulting, I have written three books, The Playful Classroom, The Courageous Classroom, and The Playful Life. So you mentioned about how it's good just for your life. That we got a book just about that. So even if a non-educator drops into this podcast, this show, there's a book for them. And I do a lot of speaking and engagements around those books. But I'm going to be honest with you, I spend a lot of time playing too, because you can't talk about being in a playful classroom and a playful life without playing in your everyday life. And so I don't know if your people can see me or they just hear me, but
they'll see you and hear you.
So you see my office here just reflects just that playfulness. If you follow me online, every now and then I'll give a little tour of my office because people see the background and they want to know all about it. Yeah. It's all the way around me here. It's all the way around fun, playfulness. And I spend time in here rejuvenating myself. Just got back from FETC. Mm. And I did a little playing while I was down there. Went to Disney while I was down there. So,
man, that a boy.
So, you ask me what I got going on. I've got so many things going on. The other day, I made a list of like all the different things, all the different pieces that are working in my brain and in the world right now. And there's more books coming. I'm working with different organizations to do different things. Just so much going on, Aaron. And I think that's reflective of people's desire and hunger for more playfulness in their lives, but also in their workspaces, their school classrooms, wherever they are. There's a hunger for that. And I think that's a great thing. I'm glad to see that.
Yeah. Gosh, it's so great that all that stuff is working in your favor, and you've made it through the COVID era and are still doing this. I know. Even follow along. I know you're designing stickers and you got your doodles. I mean, just got anything that's within the ecosystem of play, man.
I didn't even mention
stickers.
Yeah. Oh, yes. In my free time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have been. I am In April, I'm going to officially be in a store with my stickers. Yeah, there's a store in Charleston, South Carolina called The Paper Canopy that saw my cards, and they said, hey, we want to sell those. And actually, I just picked up the order today. I printed, she didn't order all of these, but I printed 500 note cards, 50 of 10 different designs, and I just picked them up today, and I was super excited to pick them up. I've been selling them online, just, you know, as pop-up orders, but I'm getting ready to launch a store where you can buy them online and that kind of thing, and who knows where that's going to lead. That's my non-education stream of revenue, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a result of living the message playful that life. You share is that playful
exactly
life.
Right.
And so
exactly
I want to get into why I think there's such a need of people wanting to know more about play. But let's start with the basic essence of this, which I think a lot of people know, but it's always good as a reminder. You know, when we're talking about playful life, playful classroom, the joys of play, I do a lot of work. I focus stuff around when I'm trying to get my foot in the door in the education system where so many educators' hands are tied to curriculum and they can barely even, I joke that you barely even fart and cough anymore without having to put on a spreadsheet or ask permission. You know, I call it purposeful play.
Yep.
It doesn't matter the angle to that, but what is it to you when you talk the playful life, the playful classroom, all that kind of work that you do, why is that so important to you? I mean, it is. Anybody that can see the visuals or followed your work, it's obvious in your passion for it, but why? And you have really kind of made that your life's work, whether it's in education or outside of education, creating, you know, cards and stickers. I mean, it is in your DNA. So why is that so important to you?
Well, what you just said right there is very important. It's in my DNA. But the reality is it's in all of our DNA. We are wired. We have an innate desire to want to be playful. But before we jump into all of that, we need to talk about how do we define play, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How do people define play? You know, we think play is, it's what little kids do. It's for, you know, it's when you see kids with dolls and blocks and art supplies. And they're doing little kitty things, right? That we can't be bothered with. But we need to be bothered with those. We need to be having art supplies for ourselves. We need to be doing more reading for pleasure. We need to go to Top Golf. We need to go for walks. We need to do all these things because what happens biologically and neurologically when we play is that all of those neurotransmitters that are in our brain are released time and time again, the dopamine, the serotonin, the anandamide, the catecholamines, all of those things are released and they have different functions in our brain or in our body. And the more that we engage those, the better. But also, the more that we engage those in our learning, the better it helps the learning to stick. In our book, Julie and I talk about the integrated paradigm. The integrated paradigm is the antithesis of the way we are traditionally taught to teach and receive learning, where as you go to this class and you do this, and then you go to this class and do this, the integrated paradigm brings them all together. And there's three points of the integrated paradigm: is movement, emotion, and cognition. And so when you get all three of those happening at the same time, the learning fires and sticks in a different way. If I ask you to tell me your most memorable moments from your entire, not only your learning career, your life, your most joyful, memorous moments, they were connected probably to moments of play that made the learning stick in your brain, made the core memory log itself. Now, of course, there are traumatic events that also have the same impact that can have negative impacts on your brain growth. I just finished listening to the book by Oprah and Dr. Perry, What Happened to You? And if you haven't read that, your listeners haven't read that, read it. But all throughout that book, they talked about the neuroplasticity of the brain and that we can heal and rewire our brain from those traumatic events. And guess how we can do that? Through playful living, through playful learning. And so you asked me why it's a passion. For two reasons. Number one, it's helping me to heal from my own trauma and my own events of life. But if it can help others to heal from theirs, that's why I want to promote it. But also, it's this double-ended. I want people to learn, and keep the learning with them. I don't want students having a moment where they cram for a test and make an A, and then 2 days later they've forgotten all the information. I want the learning to stick.
Yes.
And playful delivery of that learning. That's how it happens. You know, I mentioned this little booklet that I am putting together for my students. It's, a friend of mine created this. Her name's Emily Barry Glass, and it's about the elements of art. And we go through, I'll staple it together, and we go through each page. Now, I could just say, okay, let's look at each page and talk about it. But I have a different hands-on engaging learning experience that goes with each piece. So at the end of the day, they're not going to remember the book per se, but they're going to remember what we did with the book.
Right.
And so that's why I'm putting this together. I got to get all my supplies ready and that stuff. And I like to make the learning stick, and play makes the learning stick through the arts, through physical movement, through active participation, engagement. It makes the learning stick.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm rambling sometimes. I get so fired up.
It's perfect. It's a perfect segue. Because as you were talking about, I think about the work that I do, and I was just with the school district or a building, not a district, and I was weaving in their thing. It was like, how do we increase engagement in the classroom? And so we were looking at mindset of the adults before we get into different kind of strategies. So I brought in my Lego, and I've got a little thing I've kind of crafted over time, these quick builds that get into creativity and communication, and it's just rapid fire. But the whole goal is like, I want the adults in the room by the end of the session to be like laughing and talking and having fun. And then the punchline is, did you have a good day at PD? Yeah. Okay, so then shouldn't kids feel the same way in your classroom? Yeah. And I don't think that like kid teachers are waking up going, oh, I want my kids to be miserable. That's not what's happening. But like we've forgotten about the joys of play. And so one of the things is, you were talking, I'm curious, as you do your PD or you're working with college kids, there's the word that I use a lot with this is this idea of permission. Almost like we have stopped giving ourselves permission for play. And that's in any context, our personal lives, when we're old. I see it with kids now. Kids don't even know how to play. We're so glued to this. And I'm saying this like guilty as charged. Like, I mean, for those that are listening, not seeing, I'm holding up my phone here. Like we've lost it, but yet we're all yearning for it more than ever, even if we don't know we're intentionally doing that. So how have you worked through that? I mean, you ooze the energy of play, but that's not everybody's warm, fuzzy vibe when they walk into that space, even if deep down they're the ones that need it the most.
Right. So how have I worked through it? Well, I'll tell you the first and foremost thing that really, I mean, I've always been this way. I think it's just part of who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
My mother, you know, is a very playful person. And even when we were going through lots of things as a family, she still, we were able to laugh and play in the midst of tears sometimes.
Yeah. You know?
So I think it's part of me. But what really got me going was when I started to get into the research about play and the genetics of human DNA and how it's all wired. Studying the work of Dr. Stuart Brown, who is the leading play researcher in America. He's 90 years old, been studying play for his whole life. Getting into the work of Dr. Peter Gray, Dr. Anthony DeBenedict, who is actually a medical doctor, wrote a book called Playful Intelligence. And he talks about the five qualities of those who are strong, playfully intelligent people: sociability, wonder, imagination, spontaneity, and humor. Those five things, if you are strong in those areas, you have a higher level of playful intelligence. And so when I started looking at all this research and understanding what has been laid out there for us, and how it affects my own brain, I can't believe that we as educators aren't falling of ourselves to make everything more playful.
Amen.
Now, I know a lot of us are. I know a lot of teachers are. But when I say a lot aren't, I specifically sometimes think about the administrators. They say, oh, we've got to be rigorous. We've got to be, you know, blah, blah, you know, nose to the grindstone. But here's the thing. Play is rigorous. I have a learning experience that I can do with a ruler that everybody is playing and laughing and cutting up and being silly. But what we're doing is critically thinking about that ruler for about 30 minutes, and the brain is acting in a way, I promise you, is rigorous.
Yeah.
And then we take that and apply it to different levels of the curriculum, and play is rigorous. But I get frustrated, too, when those in education don't know the neuroscience and understand what's happening in your brain through play. Because as educators, our number one body part that we should be focused on is the brain, yeah. Right? We should understand how it works and engage in it. But, you know, in my work, I found that so many people, I'll ask rooms of hundreds of educators, you know, raise your hand if you had a course on neuroscience in education anywhere. And usually one, maybe two hands go up. And I'm like, y'all, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
we got to know more about the brain. And so when the Playful Classroom was born, Julie Jones, Dr. Julie Jones and I, who wrote the book, we were like, we've got to include all this because it's there. We've got to put it in there to help these people understand that it's just it's not only just good teaching. It's the way we're wired to learn. So I get really passionate about it. Your original question was, though, about what keeps me going. You know, I said the understanding of the neuroscience, how it impacts my body, but also how I see firsthand the teachers in my PD, the college students in my course, who come to me and say, hey, we wish every PD and every class was like this. We learned so much from you. They're learning from me, but honestly, I'll tell you who they're learning from. They're learning from themselves.
Yes.
Because they're experiencing the learning, and it's going in their brain like, you know, this does make sense, right? And so I'm leading horses to water, and it's sweet to see them take a drink, you know?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's you're so spot on there. I mean, I think about this last PD I did, and I got an email, and I had a follow-up meeting, and we're planning the next part, and they want me to come back and do more of it, but connected to content. And like, mm-hmm. We have never had this many positive comments about a PD ever. And good, it's they're like, thank you. And I'm like, well, it wasn't me. Like, I mean, just like you said, like like they drove the experience because they also could have very well tanked the experience, you know, I mean, if they really wanted to. But what I find so fascinating is they come into this, the manifestation of professional development, and I'm thinking more not like going to FETC where there's a lot of people that are going because they want to. I know that not everybody's that case, but I'm talking about like when you have like an early out in school and no one really wants to be there. They come in they're disengaged. They're thinking about maybe something rough that happened, or they're thinking about something in the evening, or they're tired and they're leaned back, and just all the body language and energy that comes with, like, they just assume the PD is not going to be good. And then when you bring that in, I sometimes try to do it if I have permission. I don't always have permission. I'll take a picture of them about halfway through when they're all leaning in, right? Like, they're not laying back and they're not on their phones and they're leaned in and they're talking and they're bringing stories to life with, you know, five Lego pieces that really the build is irrelevant. It's the message behind.
Yeah.
And I see that, and it's like, how do we still disregard this in the classroom because we're behind, because of this story that we have to catch up, that it's got to be more, or like, you know, kindergarten we don't even need recess anymore because of curriculum. And I'm just like, no, it's actually like, it's not like how to help people see that. And I think, you know, one of the things I loved about your book, The Playful Classroom, was you took all that neuroscience, you and your and Julie Jones, like, put all that together in a way that like was digestible. Like, when I read that book, I think I'm like, I get it. Like, I'm not going to take time to read a research paper, but I'm glad people like you have, and then can put that into a book that I'm like, oh, that makes sense. I get that.
I appreciate you saying that. We worked really hard on making the book accessible through its wording. You know, we wrote it in conversational speak. We wrote it in language that we felt like everybody could understand. I mean, we got some Southernisms in there.
But we
provided you with a glossary of terms.
You did. You sure did.
you could figure it out. But no, and you know, Julie and I have a podcast, and we do our podcast the same way. It's just us sitting there talking in the coffee shop because we wanted people to feel like they were in there with us. And sometimes we talk about, you know, detailed stuff from the books, but other times it's just talking about our playful living and what we're doing and that kind of stuff, because we wanted it to really connect with people. And so far we have really gotten that feedback that it is, connecting in a way that makes it understandable.
Yeah.
And I think also the neuroscience piece that's in there, you can't, when you take this book to an administrator, they can't really refute that. You know, they can't dismiss playing as fluff or, you know, just you just don't want to work. That's not true, because play is work. I know you've heard the phrase, play is the work of the child. Play is the work of all of us.
Yeah.
Every time I've ever, last night I was at my brother-in-law, my sister and brother-in-law's house, and we played a game called Catan. Have you ever heard of Catan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're obsessed with the game. Every time I play it, my brain is learning. It definitely hurts. It definitely hurts.
But in a good way. I didn't mean that in a negative way.
Playing a board game is a different experience every time you play it. I don't care how many times you played it.
Yeah.
So your brain has to constantly be firing these new synapses and, you know, making new connections, building new ideas. And play is the work of all of us. And some people say, oh, well, yeah, that's just a game. We can't do that all the time. I'm bringing it to a real world connection that just this week, I heard over and over again. When I was at FETC, I was there to work with St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. I'm sure you're familiar with St. Jude. They're very well known of all that they do for cancer research for children around the world. My friend, Sarah Busiera, she is the one who invited me to be a part. She is over their educational programming. They have three amazing programs, one of which is a STEAM program. I need to make sure that you know about it so you can start get involved. But I'll share the link that so all the people can have that. But anyway, she said, you know, every day that the scientists at the Children's Research Hospital go to work, they're playing.
Mm.
And at first, it took me a minute, you know, because I was like, let me process this. They're looking for a cure for cancer. They're playing. She said, well, what they're doing is they're experimenting with this to see if this will work. And if this doesn't work, they try something else. And if this doesn't work, they try something else. They're in there playing with all the things. See, you have to figure out how to define play. Yeah. Play is anything really that brings you joy. And for those scientists, finding that cure is going to bring them joy. So they're in there every day playing. It's STEM in real world. STEM and play go hand in hand, right?
Yep.
You know, I think about when, you know, like, you know, newscasters go to work. That's their job, yeah, but they like it. They're playing while it's playful for them, you know? You look at their banter with each other. I'm looking at, you know, certain jobs just invite playfulness to it. But let's go back in time a little bit. Think about, I don't know, whoever invented the internet. I forget the guy's name. I don't know. Some guy, some woman, I don't know. But somewhere in a garage, you know what they were doing? They were tinkering. They were playing around.
Yep.
And all of a sudden it happened, you know?
Yep.
They were playing. You know, nobody was like, I am going to invent the internet. He was just teaching out and then app, you know?
Yep.
Same thing with probably most of our inventions, you know? The airplane. It was the Wright brothers playing around, you know, till they got it right.
Yep. Well, I think you hit on that. You know, as you talk about the idea of play and that idea of joy that play can bring, and whether that's us scientists in a lab tinkering, trying to figure out the cure, or, you know, a doctor trying to help remedy an issue that maybe a person has, or the classroom, or ourselves. You know, there's, I don't know if misconception is the right word, but there's something that seems to be amiss where, like, in order to learn, I'm speaking education system, because I know it's not the case everywhere, and I know it's not true in every single school and classroom.
Right.
Like, in order to learn, like, if kids are smiling and having fun, then are they learning? Like, it's missing. But then at the same time, on the other side of our mouth, we're like, oh, but we care about the whole child and we want to have a good experience. And it's like, do you see, like how are people not seeing the connection between, like, the more that we make the learning rigid or rigorous, or insert whatever, you know, death term you want to use.
Yeah, I like the word rigid, you know, there.
Yeah, like chronic absenteeism is at all-time high. Engagement, like, kids it's not working. And then it's like, but we do know what does work. And it just drives me bonkers. And it's like, the research is there. And it's like, I wish I could just put, like, a memory stick in some leader's head and be like, just download this information so you see that this actually does work.
Yeah, I think the word rigid there is probably the best word to describe it, because again, I want to reclaim the word rigorous. Play is rigorous.
Yes.
I want to reclaim it and make sure that everybody understands that rigorous does not mean rigid, and it does not mean boring, and it does not mean difficult. It can be difficult.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be difficult, but, you know, playing can also be difficult.
Yes.
How many times have you ever put together a, I don't know, 1,000-piece Lego?
Yeah.
You were playing, but is it difficult? You bet it is, right?
Yeah.
And so but you were absolutely playing. Playing can be difficult and it can be rigorous, but it doesn't have to be rigid and boring. And I think, you know, I think back to, you know, in the history of school in America, that's where I have to focus because I don't know history of school around the world, but history of school in America, when we were in the age of producing factory workers, it was very, this is it, this is how you do it, boom. It was very repetitive, you know? But we don't live in that world anymore.
No.
We live in a world where, you know, creativity and collaboration and, you know, all those skills that people call soft skills, I say them necessary skills. They're not soft skills, they're necessary for functioning in our society. Play brings all that into our workspace. And what we have to do is we have to change the mindsets of the people. And the neuroscience for me is helping change the mindsets and the people of the sphere that I've been working with. I'm working very hard to help people understand that play is not just for preschool and kindergarten. It is for every single grade level. You go look at the feedback I'm getting from my classes. These students need more than a PowerPoint and a lecture.
Yes.
They just need it.
Yeah.
And if we don't give it to them, we're failing them. And you know what? I need it too.
Yeah.
I need it too. I love an online workshop, but I would rather be in person with my hands on it, you know, learning and doing and that kind of thing. And so I need that also. And I think the majority of us need that because that's the way we're wired.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's so true. You know, as you're talking, I think that's, you know, maybe part of that at the beginning, I phrased it as a misconception and something that I'm thinking about is, you know, sometimes we think that the whole experience is fun and joyful. I mean, obviously I know that's one of the byproduct of it, but I was thinking through as you were talking about building Lego. And I mean, I've got two published books where I've designed robots for out of Lego kits. And I will tell you, it was all play, 100%. Yeah. But there were times where I was ready to also chuck my robot when I couldn't quite get it designed the way I wanted, how I had it in my mind or in my sketch. But the joy comes from when you do arrive at that solution. And, you know, I mean, so I think there's something to that journey and, you know, in STEM that we call that tinkering or, you know, science and experimented a bit. It's like, how also do we weave that narrative of play in there? Cause that's very much what it is because that's all I was doing. I was constantly playing. What if I do this? What if I do that? What if I try this? And so, it's so key. And maybe to stack onto that idea. So I'm thinking about people that listen to this show and there some of them I know will be diving into the research and looking into your book and your work. And you know, if they wanted to dabble and maybe put their toe into the ecosystem of play, maybe for themselves, they haven't done it themselves for a while, or they just want to introduce into their classroom because maybe it's been a while. You know, is there I know you've got a bazillion ideas, but is there a quick little kind of play activity where they could dab their toe in to kind of just be reminded of the impact of play for themselves and their students?
You know, I've got hundreds of ideas that they could do. I'm going to give you a real quick one that I think could be done in any classroom, any place. Give every student a white piece of paper. It doesn't have to be white. Just a copy paper is what I'm thinking. Just a copy paper and a marker. Two colors specifically. One for the first half, one for the second half. And you're going to ask them to doodle as many things as they can in the shape of a triangle. Okay? Mm. Doodle as many things as they can and give them like 2 minutes, right?
Okay.
They're going to doodle the things. Most of them are going to doodle like a pizza, a Christmas tree, a party hat, all the basic things, right?
Yeah.
But there's going to be some who dig deeper, you know, and they're probably in 2 minutes, you're probably going to get an average of about, I don't know, 8 to 9 doodles. Okay. But then after they do that, have them take the other marker. And, well, first, before they take the other marker, count the total number that they got by themselves, right?
Okay.
Then they're going to venture around the room 2 minutes, and they're going to add to their paper all the other doodles that everybody else came up with that they didn't.
Mm.
Okay.
Yep.
So they're playing, they're doodling. Notice I said the word doodle, not draw. We're not drawing. Doodle is more playful, number one. Number two, it's more accessible. When you say draw, people shut down. They say what?
I can't draw.
Nobody says, I can't doodle, right? Nobody says that. So you're going to doodle. And then you have them doodle all the new things that they find from floating around and learning from their peers. And they're going to be like, oh my gosh, that was a good idea. Look at this, blah, blah, blah. They're going to be playing. They're going to be talking. They're going to be chatty. They're going to be doodling. And then at the end, you ask them to count the number of new doodles that they added. It's always more than the first. Always. Okay?
Okay.
And then you look at the total number that they came up by themselves and together, and it shows you this power of collaboration. It's playful. Then you can take the doodles and you can ask them to pick two or three and write a poem about those two or three. Take those two or three, write a story about those two or three. Take those two or three and write math equations about them. Whatever your content is, you can take that. But it started with a playful moment. What's happened is you broke barriers down. You built connections between the class students. You set the tone of, hey, we're here to have fun in our learning. And you've shown them the power of collaboration in the process. I mean, it's just I call it triangle trouble. I mean, because I had to call it something because I call it triangle trouble.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the beginning, it feels like, oh my gosh, this is hard. I can't think of all these things. But by the end, you've got 20 or 30 doodles of triangle things. And so, but you could do that with anything. You could do that with any shape, and you could be specific about what it is that you're doing. But one of the things that Julie and I talk about in the book is how play develops a sense of egalitarianism in the room, where it's not me versus you, but it's us working together.
Oh, yes.
Even if you're, like you may say, well, wait a minute, what if you're on team sports? Well, your team is the egalitarianism, right? You're working together. Nobody on the team is going to be the best. Even if you are the best, it doesn't get you anything extra if everybody wins. You're just part of the winning, right? So if you're talking about sports, there's definitely, you know, some head-to-head combat there, if you will, with your opposite team. But the reason I mentioned the triangle trouble is because I think it's a really fun one, and it's easy to do. And there's so many different outcomes that you can do with that. That's a great one to do. You could do that in your Lego builds, you know?
Yeah.
Have them build things that are in the shape of a triangle.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they would do that, but I'm sure they could come up with it.
The final way. As you talk about that, it just reminds me of when I try to introduce purposeful play into the space. Like, I also try to be very mindful not to make it a competition, because that also eliminates so many kids from even trying. And it's like your triangle trouble, what I love about that is it starts to open up the space for vulnerability. And so I've done stuff where we've taken five Lego, they put it in a random shape, I give them a prompt, and then they have to explain how their build is the answer to that prompt for 30 seconds and talk the entire time and can't stop. And there'll be sometimes adults that'll be like, won't share because they're not comfortable.
Yeah.
So I'll say, so then if you say as a school, you want kids to be successful and creative and problem solving, and you as the professionals aren't even comfortable sharing a 30 second story about a 5-piece Lego build.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how great your lessons are. Because what's being expressed here is it's not safe to be vulnerable to sharing ideas that might be judged, critiqued, right, wrong, or indifferent. So we've got a bigger issue at play here than having this wonderful engagement lesson. Because otherwise, you're going to get all the same. So I love that triangle trouble, because that's also a nice way to start to shift the culture of a classroom in a safe, fun way. That so when you do get to those bigger questions and challenges that you want kids to wrap their head around and come up with solutions with, it doesn't seem so daunting.
One of the things that you're kind of mentioning, whether you know you're mentioning it or not, there's in the book we talk about there's play as a behavior, you know, like recess and kickball and making art and dancing and whatnot. But then there's also play as a mindset. It's the approach of which you are going to deal with things, handle things like that. You know, I could talk to you all day about collaboration and its importance, but when I have this playful moment that I had a playful approach to it, it communicates it in a different fashion. So we talk that's important that people understand that play is a behavior, but it's also a mindset. One advice I want to give to all the people listening, bit of advice. You may be listening to this and say, I want to make all of my curriculum more playful, and I want to, you know, I'm just going to jump in head first. Don't jump in too deep, because you're going to overwhelm yourself and you're going to burn out. So Julie and I talk a lot about looking for the nooks and crannies. Start there. You know, before you jump in head first into changing a whole curriculum that you're working on, look at your daily schedule. Find the small little bits of time where you can infuse something playful to build. Start building a culture in your classroom, building that mindset of play is okay in here. We're going to be relaxed. We're going to have fun. We're going to be silly. It's going to be engaging. And in those little nooks and crannies, that's where you really start to change the culture of your room. If you go too far too fast, it can have an adverse effect. So I'm thinking about, like, in elementary school specifically, because that's where my mind goes, the way that you line up to go to lunch, or the way that you pack your book bags to be dismissed, or the way you pass out the materials. Those are the nooks and crannies that you can make playful interactions happen that will then set up better playful interactions in the learning. I hope that makes sense what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you talk about building that culture, the nooks and crannies, that's focusing on those really helps to do just that.
Yeah, I love that. And I think those are good ways to reflect on our school day and our practices, and gives us a good start. Yeah, we don't want to bite off more than we can chew, mm-hmm. which we sometimes do that more often than we like. Yeah. The moral compass is just, we just think we want to fix it all right now for the best of what's children. It's like, okay, listen.
I especially think the ones out there that are the best educators, that's how they do. They try to, they want to just do it all, you know,
yeah.
quick as can.
Yeah. Well, hey, I want to be respectful of time here, and I want to make sure that we get a chance for people to learn more about you. But the last question that I have before I wrap up with my final two questions to share mm-hmm. with you is, you know, as you're doing this work, you've been doing it a while, you're continuing to do it, you're continuing to expand and share the message of play and the importance of that, and connecting it to the neuroscience and the research, so people see those connections. You know, what is it that, you know, you hope for the future of education? You have worked tirelessly to bring awareness to this and show models and examples, and I mean, I've follow the work forever and a day, and I love it, and I've read all your books and all that stuff. You know, as you continue to move forward, how do you envision the role of play evolving in the education systems?
God, that's such a loaded question, and I there's so many right and wrong answers to that question. I've been to. When we wrote this book, our desire was to make learning fun, okay? And we wanted it to be fun for the students, but we also wanted it to be fun for the teachers. I don't know if you've been paying attention lately, but teaching is not fun for teachers right now.
No.
Nothing about it. Nothing about teaching is fun right now, other than the way we get to deliver the lessons. But even that right now, it feels like it's being constricted, everything. And so my desire of the future, and thinking about my book specifically and how they might plan that, I want to bring the fun into learning and decrease the stress of school. I feel like school is stressful on so many levels for both students, teachers, and admins. And I think if everybody would just take a breath and bring playfulness into, and I want to say bring it back, but I don't know that it was ever there. It was there maybe in kindergarten. You know, kindergarten when I was a kid was playful. We had centers and we had playtime, and you know, we went to recess, but that was about it after kindergarten, you know.
Yeah, right.
I would love to see playgrounds in middle schools and high school. I would love to see swing sets at every new high school there ever that was built. There's no reason that those kids can't eat their lunch out on a playground, swinging, jungle gyms, swinging bridge. It could happen. The money's there.
Yeah.
The money is there. Don't tell me the money's not there. I see these $1 million football stadiums. You can swing a $60,000, $70,000 playground over here, you know? for some reason we've taken the play out. Well, we didn't take it out there. It was never there to begin with. I never had a playground in high school.
No,
did you?
Me, I did not. No.
We had a blacktop. You go out on the blacktop. Come up with your own play, whatever.
Yeah,
and then you wonder why people got in trouble at lunch, just because there wasn't nothing to do. So you started a fight. I don't know. That's what people do.
You're right.
You know, I want for learning to be fun, and I know that it can be. I know that school can be. I saw it in my classroom. I saw it with my students. I see it with my students in high school and college. And that was the goal of the book, is to help learning be fun, both for students and teachers. And it just feels very heavy right now.
It does. Yeah. And I think we'll definitely link that book.
I can talk about that all day.
I know you can. Yeah. We'll make sure all those links are in the show notes for people to check out. It's definitely well worth the time to read. And so I want to come full circle here, Jed, as we wrap up. And you've given us so many great things to think about and resources and stuff to practice and application with triangle trouble. And so there's no reason for anybody to not walk away from this episode and not think about ways to begin to incorporate play. But I've been asking guests this season these last two questions to kind of make sure we also stick to the idea of the story of the person. And so the first question that I have for you is, you know, what's one of the best pieces of advice you've been given?
Well, I'll tell you, it's kind of tattooed on my body here. I'll show it to you. I don't know if you can see it. It's reversed on the screen. It says, "Make a mark." And behind me here, there's also a plaque saying, says, "If I pass through life without making a mark, for what did I live?" But the make a mark that's tattooed on me, it's a quote from Peter Reynolds' book, The Dot.
Yep.
Peter Reynolds illustrated the cover of both of our Playful Classroom and Playful Life books. He's a good friend of mine, and I've been using The Dot in my work a long, long time. And in the book, the quote says, "Make a mark and see where it takes you." And I think that's probably the best advice I've ever been given, is just to try. That basically, at the heart of that, it means just try. Be willing to try and see what happens. And if it flops, then so be it. You learn the way not to do it, right? And so just be willing to try. That's why I had it tattooed on my arm, specifically right there on the inside of my left arm. I see it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm typing, I can see it just peeking out from under my arm there. You know, when I'm working out, I know it doesn't look like I work out a lot, but I do. I do work out. I can see it. You know, I just, it's very powerful words to me. I hear Peter every now and then. I get to talk to Peter, and I hear that a lot from him, you know?
Yeah.
Make that mark and just see what happens. Just see what happens.
Yeah. So good. Man, such a gosh, his picture books are
amazing. Amazing.
Also amazing. Yes.
Every one of them. I'm so honored to know him. I'm really honored to know him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as you should be. So, thanks for sharing that. And so, the last thing, to end on a positive note, this whole thing has been positive, so it's not like we need a bit of positivity, but, you know, what is something that you want to rave about? So maybe it's something that we did not share in this conversation that you really want to make sure it got across. Maybe it's an awesome, I know you're an avid book reader, a TV show. It could be anything, just one little tiny splash of joy for people that might need something. You are already queued up, so I'm gonna let you go.
It's gonna be a shameless plug, because I do want to rave about it. So just tickled, excited, thrilled, humbled, like proud of my little stickers that I'm putting out in the world and my doodles.
I love them.
And this right here, this is just a prototype of a sticker sheet. Nobody can get these. I haven't put these out there in the world, but this is just a handful of the doodles. This isn't even all of them.
Yeah.
I'm trying some different things with merch and stuff like that. And these little doodles just bring me so much joy.
They bring
me so much joy, and they have personality, and I don't know, this bird right here, this is the OG, this is the first one that I put out in the world, and I just was super proud of it, and I don't know, I'm sorry for the people who are listening and not seeing, but they need, if you want to look it up, you can, if you look up the hashtag Jed Creates, you will see all of my doodles, all of the, anything I've ever made, honestly, is under that hashtag, but it's neat to see those resonating with people and people liking them and wanting them in note cards and wanting them in stickers.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like that. So I'm raving about that right now. I'm really proud of it.
And you should be. I love
it. The little boy who lives in my head, he's like so stoked that that's finally happening.
It's so good. I love everything you got going on. So, man, I can't thank you enough for this conversation. This is just, gosh, such a great dopamine hit for me. It's so good to touch base with you and share and actually have a verbal exchange here. And so, you know, I always like to end, I'll get all the links. I think I know most of your links already, but I always like to frame it as someone sitting at a red light right now and wants to jump on the Jed learning journey. You just shared your hashtag Jed Creates, but where's the best place for them to go follow? And I'll make sure
if they're sitting at a stoplight right now. If they're sitting at a stoplight, jump on Instagram, look up at Mr. Dairyberry. That's probably the best place to get me and engage with me right now and to see all of the work that I'm doing. I put everything on there.
Okay.
There's several hashtags that I use that are there. Jed Walks, Jed Teaches, Jed Creates, Jed Reads. Just go look up all those things on Instagram and you'll be able to connect right away.
Perfect. And like I said,
I'll calm down before the red light changes.
Yeah, there you go. Challenge accepted. Well, Jed, this has been absolutely wonderful, man. I appreciate you taking some time out of all the things you got going on to chat with me. And I look forward to keep following your journey and learning from you and keep doing what you're doing. And I'm so excited to bring your voice and work to more people.
Well, thank you for having me. And, you know, hopefully this is the first of many episodes. I'll jump back on anytime you need me. Let me know.
Absolutely. Hey, challenge accepted.
Chaos. Woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, chilling with coffee mugs, me and coffee chugs, talking education all across the nation, pushing boundaries, thinking innovation. Chaos.